And he said, I just believe you can do this. And it gave me the courage to try. And courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is the willingness to act in spite of the fear.
You're listening to the Nick Vujicic Podcast, the place where you will be coached in how to turn your obstacles into opportunities, inspired to dream big, and challenged to never give up. Now here's our host, New York Times best-selling author, speaker, and entrepreneur, Nick Vujicic.
Hi, thank you for watching. I'm so excited to share with you the interview and time that I had with legendary Les Brown. And before we get into today's interview, I want to thank my friends and partners at Storyville Coffee. It is the coffee that I've been drinking for years, and I'm not just telling you that it's the best coffee in the world, honestly, but they actually donate to organizations leading the charge against human trafficking. If you want to try Storyville Coffee, I'll tell you right now, it's an experience not to miss, delivered straight to your door. Go to storyville.com/Nick and enter the promo code Nick to actually get 50% off right now your first shipment order. Love you, Storyville. Thank you for making the coffee that you do and making the world a better place. Everyone, here we go now, the interview of Nick and Les Brown.
Well, hello, everyone. I am very, very excited and honored that the very first interview of mine that I want to share with the world, if there'd be anyone who's the legend, motivator, coach, trainer, brother Les Brown himself joins me today, and we are going to be inspiring you in this time. Maybe you've never thought of being a speaker, but you realize that you have a story to share. We're going to get into how we all have a story. But first of all, I just want to say, for the record, Les Brown has been one of the most encouraging people in my speaking career and my life. He has been an incredible, generous brother who's encouraged me along the way. And he's joining me virtually today. Les, thank you for joining me today and being my very first interview.
Well, thank you. I feel very honored, my brother from another mother.
You know, I'll never forget our trip to Poland. Do you remember? Of course you do. But
we were so bad, weren't we?
Do you remember what we did on the plane? Tell our viewers what we did on the plane.
We got on the plane and somebody came up with the brilliant idea to put Nick up top in the storage compartment and then close it. So when the flight attendants came by to open it up, oh, it would be startled. We had a great time, man. It was such a wonderful experience. I'll never forget it.
Me too. Les, I'll never forget being there in Poland in front of, I think it was over 20,000 people in that stadium, and sharing the stage with you multiple times has been my honor. And I want to say thank you, sir, for all the millions of people that you've inspired around the world. And we know that there are many millennials who maybe follow me on my social media who don't know who Les Brown is. And I wanted to actually start from the very beginning, as much detail as you want or less detail as you feel need. But please, Les Brown, introduce yourself to those who may not have heard the hungry from Les Brown. I love you. Hungry? Are you hungry? There's no one like you, Les. Please tell us about how you went through some difficult times, amazingly difficult times in your life, and out of that, you birthed a vision for yourself to motivate others to find hope and find the appetite of living life to its fullest. Tell us, Les, where did it all start for you?
Well, I was born in an abandoned building on a floor in a poor section of Miami, Florida called Liberty City with a twin brother. And when we were 6 weeks of age, we were taken in as foster kids. And then after that, we were adopted altogether with seven children. I was one of the seven. And when I was in the fifth grade, I was labeled educable, mentally retarded, and put back from the fifth grade to the fourth grade. And I failed again when I was in the eighth grade. And I had a high school teacher who did an interruption in my life, who had a personality very similar to your personality. I was in his class looking for another student, and he told me to go to the front of the room to work a problem out. I said, sir, I can't do that. He said, look at me. I said, I can't do that. I'm not one of your students. And then all of the other students started laughing, saying, he's Leslie. His twin brother is Wesley. He's DT. And he asked, what's DT? And they said, he's the dumb twin. And I said, I am, sir. And he came from behind his desk and he looked at me and he pointed at me and he said, don't you ever say that again. Someone's opinion of you does not have to become your reality. And so that was a turning point in my life. As I often say that he looked at me with the eyes of Goethe. He looked at it, who said, if look at a man the way that he is, he only becomes worse, but look at him as if he were what he could be, then he becomes what he should be. And I literally watched him and followed him. He became my spiritual father. I wanted to be like him because he's a great communicator.
Love that. Les, what an incredible, humbling experience. First of all, what really stuck out to me was in this time where many of us feel trapped and quarantined. Your teacher was the one who first inspired you at that school. I actually just heard yesterday that there had been many teachers who feel like they're not being productive. They feel stressed. They're at home right now with their kids driving them crazy, feeling like they're actually failing other people. I want you to give an encouraging word right now to all the teachers who, in a way, may not have been as bold as your teacher, but really understanding how much teachers, it was the teacher for you, it was the janitor at my high school that was the person who first looked at me and said, you're going to be a speaker. Can you please give an encouraging word to teachers, really, to understand the depths of despair, discouragement, and loneliness that are really in their classrooms, and really what seeds of encouragement and challenges teachers can be right now, understanding to encourage themselves of saying, I am a world changer.
There's absolutely no question that teachers are world changers. When you start talking about that, I kind of laugh because I had a janitor named Mr. Freeman. Who remembers janitors' names? Mr. Freeman. And he was a janitor that if you were out of class, he would chase you and he could run real fast and he would catch you before you got to your classroom. I mean, he was something else. And he was a man who was committed to helping the kids, because in inner city, there's a lot of poverty, there's a lot of drugs. And he was a man who said, you can make it out of here. And then I had another teacher named Mr. Charles Jenkins. And I knew I had failed, but he told me, he said, look, I'm looking at your report card. You failed. I'm going to change this, but you better run like hell before I change my mind. I said, okay. And I started running. Teachers are so very important, and I encourage them. My mother used to say, a watch pot never boils. That don't look for instant solutions or instant transformation. Just plant the seeds, do the right thing, operate from a place of love. God is love, and he who dwelleth in love dwelleth in God, and God in them. And those seeds will begin to blossom and bloom years into the future. I don't think that Mrs. Hunter and Mr. Doze and Mary Ford Williams and all the teachers at Douglas Elementary School live to see this Les Brown. And so there are things that we're going to do, impact that we're going to make on individuals that we might not live to see them blossom and bloom, but all of them are part of me. All of them contributed to this young man that you now see, who's 75 years old.
You're 75? No way, Les. You look amazing. I want to be like you when I grow up.
Oh, you'll be doing the right thing.
Yeah. I love encouraging teachers and those around us who really make a difference, because really we all need inspiration and motivation. You know this though more than everyone, Les.
Yes.
You've spoken in front of millions of people, whether it's digitally or through your book or through your seminars, your coaching and training. What I love how you really help people to face their reality is it's one thing to be inspired and encouraged by somebody, but to own it. So someone can be watching right now, Nick Vujicic and Les Brown, arguably the top two speakers in the world right now. Yeah. in our opinion, in our humble opinion.
We are legends in our own minds.
That's it, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
But when we motivate people and encourage someone, you know, someone listening to the best motivational speaker, reading the best book, going to the best motivational summit or conference in 2021 or beyond, you being encouraged by the people around you, how was it? What was the process where Les listened to the encouragement, saw other people's belief in himself that he couldn't even see? What was that turning point that you realized, wow, I am going to own the destiny to my life. I am going to now believe for myself.
I believe it's very important that you have people around you that can take you to a place inside yourself that you can't go by yourself. Muhammad Ali said, I'm the greatest, but he had in his corner Angelo Dundee, who saw the Muhammad Ali that others never got a chance to see. And he brought that guy out. You know, Michael Jordan is considered one of the greatest basketball players of all time, but he never won a championship without Phil Jackson. All of us, I believe, should have someone in our lives that can see what we can't see, because you can't see the picture when you're locked in the box. And so it's very important to believe in somebody's belief in you until your belief kicks in. I didn't believe that I could do this for a very long time, but I believe when Mike Williams said, Brownie, you could do this. I was asked to speak in the Georgia Dome before 80,000 people, and I panicked, and I locked myself in the restroom. And so they had to go get Mike Williams to come to the restroom and knock on the door and say, Brownie? I said, yes. He said, what's wrong? I said, I can't hear the voices. He said, you can't hear the voices? I said, no. He said, you're scared, aren't you? I said, yes. He said, Brownie, are you listening? I said, yes. They came to see you. You didn't come to see them. He said, make your mother proud today. I said, don't use my mother on me, Mike. Don't do that. She would be proud of you. Come out the bathroom now. They're stalling. You got this. And I came out. I said, you know, only a lowlife would do that. Talk about my mother. He said, yes, she's going to be proud of you. And he gave me the courage to go on that stage to speak before 80,000 people in the Georgia Dome. What we do is distract, dispute, and inspire. How people live their lives is a result of the story they believe about themselves. And so what we do is that when we speak, we distract them from their story. And through our presentation, we dismantle their current belief system and inspire them, as Mother Teresa would say, to become a pencil in the hand of God and start creating a new chapter in their lives. There are some who say, if that guy can do it and he doesn't have any arms and don't have any legs, I know I can do it. Or they'll look at me and say, if he could do it and he's got the complexion of rejection, of blacker than 100 midnights, I know I can do it.
Man, I love you, Les. Les, you never stop laughing. I love that. You make the world a better place, sir. And you,
I got to share this with you.
Go for it.
I was at Cancer Centers of America about 3 weeks ago. So Dr. Taha from Pakistan, he said, Mr. Brown, I said, yes. Do you know that you have fourth stage cancer? I said, no. He said, and it's metastasized to 7 areas of your body, including the spine. I said, wow. He said, why are you smiling? I said, 7 is my lucky number. He said, what? I said, I'm one of seven children. I was born February the 17th. My phone number is 702. Seven is my lucky number. He looked at his assistant and he said, this is a strange one we got here. And so, but what really got me more than anything, I said, can I get a second opinion? He said, yes. And you're ugly too. And then he said, but you got this. You can conquer this. This doesn't have to conquer you. When we laugh, and this is why I laugh a lot, when we laugh, the mind shuts down and the heart opens up. And so while I was laughing for him saying, and you're ugly, he came back and said, but you got this. We determine the diagnosis. You and God determines the prognosis. You can handle this. And that went straight to my heart. Where your heart is, there your treasure is also. And so by the time I got my consciousness, it was in my heart. And I said, yes, I can do this. And I was so glad that he did that. But he did something else that was phenomenal. He gave me a watch with no arms on it. I said, how can I tell time? He said, every time you look at this, remember, you determine how much time you're going to spend on the planet. Wow. And that's a daily reminder. And so while other people were told, get your affairs in order, he said to me, you determine how much time you and God, that's your conversation, that's your relationship, how long you're going to be here to do your work. It was jaw-dropping. And so here I am, my PSA is 2,400, 1 to 4 is normal, okay? And laughing and happy every day and still ugly.
You, so profound. Les, so profound. I love your humility and your transparency. You've always been that way, and you genuinely love everyone around you. You have found your purpose and your vision as a speaker, and me as a co-speaker, your half-brother. I always want to ask people, if in their profession, what do they mostly remember about their very first speech? And when you decided to do that, can you tell us about your first speech presentation, your fears, how that experience was for you?
The fear was tremendous. And I stood up and my mind sat down. And the words wouldn't come out. The cat had my tongue. So I left the stage. And Mr. Washington said, go back out there. And I said, Mr. Washington, I can't think. And he said, listen, go back out there. He said, if you run today, you'll be running for the rest of your life. He said, anything that's worth doing is worth doing badly until you get it right.
Whoa. Say that again.
He said, anything that's worth doing is worth doing badly until you get it right. He said, if you know how to do it, then do it right. But if you don't, do it badly until you get it right. Because I forgot what I had memorized. I couldn't think when I looked at the audience. And he told me to go out there and stumble through it. And I did. And then the next time I went out there, I had my composure and I was able to deliver it. And so when we look at what we want to do and we answer the call on our life, and I do believe that what we're doing is a calling. A calling is something that you love so much that you do it for nothing, but you do it so well that people will pay you to do it. And because I enjoyed it so much, I did it and did it and did it for years. Most people don't know Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., he did the speech, I Have a Dream, over 200 times before he did it at the Washington Monument. So there are people now listening to us who have knowledge. Knowledge is the new currency. And over 22 million people filed for unemployment compensation. These people have a story. They've either lived a story that others can benefit from it, or they have observed stories that they can share. And the ability to present yourself is the new frontier on how you can control your own personal economy, because the computer eliminates geography. Now, all of my speaking engagement went off the books, but I'm doing 3 to 4 webinars a day, making more money from home on my computer in this format than getting on airplanes and sleeping in different hotels away from my children and my grandchildren and my 4 great-grandsons. When the disciples could not catch fish, Jesus said, throw your net on the other side. And that's what we have to do. We have to rethink our lives and throw our net on the other side. This is a time where more creativity, more innovation, more positive and productive and creative things are going to come out of this time than any other time in history, because we're being stripped. A major transformation is taking place on the planet. And those things that are being removed, they're going to be replaced for greater things.
Love it, Les. I love that you referred to how many millions of people just filed for unemployment. In your speaking career, Les, you know when you have a dream, you have a vision, and you're hungry for it, but then we face discouragement because we're not now talking about thriving as much as surviving. What was your first job, if you will, apart from speaking, where maybe you had in your mind and your heart, you're going to be the best speaker that you can be. You were convicted that one day people are going to know your story, be changed forever. You're going to save lives. You're going to be in the top 10 speakers of all time in our era. And I want you to know, Les, that many people right now are discouraged. They're like, yeah, I had a dream, but now it seems as though I might need to apply for a totally different job just to make ends meet. How does someone overcome that discouragement right now and have that mindset where you can tether in your mind the long-term goal and dreams and vision? Maybe some may have to change, maybe not, but how do you get to the here and now and make those short-term steps that really are vital for them and their family right now?
You have to sometimes do what you need to do to keep food on the table, a roof over your head, transportation, so that you get to do what you want to do. And there's nothing wrong with that, because that's a growth experience. This is a time, and my daughter believes, that gaps are from God. This is a time that people can upgrade their skill set. This is a time where people can begin to face the reality that Marion White said. He said, in life, when you don't have enough courage or insight to know that you have outgrown a situation and it's time to move on, life will move on you. And so these people have been moved on by life because there's something better. When something is taken from me, I always say, Father, give this back to me if it's for my highest good. If not, give me its equivalent or something better. We have to begin to anchor ourselves around the word that says, he'll never leave me nor forsake me. We have to take a stand on glory in tribulation. It's easy to be positive and motivated when you have your health, when you have money, your marriage is working out, the children are acting like they have good sense. It's easy to have faith then, but when life snatched a rug out from under you and smack you around, now that's when you have to call on your faith. Now that's why we are told, be ye not hearers of the word only, but be ye also doers of the word. Now you've got to pull out your faith and begin to know, therefore take unto you the whole armor of God, and ye may be able to withstand in the evil day. What is that armor? The knowing we will get through this, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. We will know in our hearts of hearts, nothing to prove it, that I'm greater than this. Greater is he that's in me than he that's in the world. And I'm hungry to get to the other side.
Man, I just went to church, man. I love it. Talk about hungry. Talk about your message that you have been sharing for decades now, and it's changed lives. It's changed the trajectory of what people thought was possible, and they were able to now blow the ceiling off any limits of their vision and dream. Les, you have the mic. Tell people, how do we get hungry and why it's important?
You have to face life and see it as it is and just decide, I'm not going to let this decide my future. I was 5 years old when my hunger began. I was downtown with my mother. My brothers and sisters, the neighbors will always volunteer to keep them. But they said I was a handful. So mama had to take me with her downtown. And this day it was like 95 degrees. I was 5 years old. I let her hand go and I ran and started drinking from a water fountain. And my mother, she grabbed me by the neck and threw me on the ground and started hitting me in the face and the head. And I said, mama, 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 please, mama, it's me. And then a white policeman came and he had a billy club and he's hitting it in his hand. And he kept on hitting it. He said, okay, you can stop beating that little nigger boy now. I won't have to hit him with my nightstick. And then he walked away and he was laughing and looked back. And my mother started crying. She said, Leslie, I'm so sorry. I didn't want to beat you like that. But that water fountain is for whites only. And had that policeman hit you with his nightstick, he would have had to kill me. And I just did what I thought I could do to distract him from beating you or shooting you. I'm so sorry, son. And I said, mama, I said, it's okay, mama. It didn't hurt that badly. It's okay. It's okay. I know you love me. I just didn't know why you were beating me like that. And in that moment, the moments in life that's before this and there's after this, and after this, your life is never the same again. Martin Seligman says in a book called Learned Optimism, between the ages of 0 and 5, we know what's available to us and what's not available. There's a word that's yes or no. And I knew then the signs that I saw, whites, Jews, dogs, and colors not allowed, that I knew then that there were certain things that weren't available to me, that because of my color of my skin, and I said, I'm not going to let this define me, even though I'm in a culture that does not recognize my humanity, even though everything around me is designed to marginalize me, even though the Constitution of the United States says a black man has no rights in which a white man has to respect, I decided that I was going to make it in spite of. And that's you. You decided, no, I don't have legs. No, I don't have arms, but I got a bad big toe. And I can out-type Les Brown 42 words a minute. He can't type none. And he has 10 fingers, all right? I'm going to make the best of what I got. How you like that?
Wow, Les, I love you. I'm going to give you an air hug. This social distancing, man.
That's right.
Love you so much. I miss you. Can't wait to hang out face to face. Thank you for sharing that. Wow. I'm sure right now everyone's speechless. And I know that everyone has their story. Everyone goes to despair and that point to say, I'm going to make it. I'm going to get through this. Can you share with us, Les, you had the hunger, you went for your dream and your vision. At what point in your life could you look back and say, wow, the dream I once had in my heart and my mind and all the people around me that was used by God to make me who I am toward my destiny and my full God-given potential. What point in your life was that that you look back and said, wow, it happened?
When I bought my mother a home, that was my childhood dream. My mother, she adopted seven kids. She only had a third grade education. She never had any children herself. I always say that God took me out of my biological mother's womb and placed me in the heart of my adopted mother. And Abraham Lincoln is a person I always quote who said, all that I am and all that I ever hope to be, I owe to my mother. When I opened the door, put the key in and opened the door of this home that she saw one day when we were driving her around to look at homes, and she said, if I lived in something like that, I would feel like Mrs. Rockefeller. And I opened the door and I said, Mrs. Rockefeller, this is your home. This is your home. It's fully furnished. And this is your home. And she looked, she said, Leslie, you didn't have to do this. I said, you didn't have to adopt us either, but you did. And she stuck her head in the door. She said, is anybody home? I said, Mama, there's no one here but us. And she stepped in and she walked around. Mama was 78 at the time. And she said, thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. And then she looked at me and she said, and you were such a problem child. I said, I know, but I got money now. Oh, boy. And we both laughed and cried. But that's when I knew that was a moment in my life that I will never forget. The joy in her eyes as she walked and looked around in amazement, looking at a house the size of the homes that she used to clean. And now she's in one that she owns. That was a defining moment for me.
Incredible, incredible.
Yes.
Before we get into the last three questions that I'm going to be asking each of my guests.
Yes.
Talk to us about the foster and adoption need in America, and to remind people that when we have chaos, it's very difficult to look at other people's situation and looking at their suffering. I remember calling you a couple weeks ago to see if we could do this interview today, and you mentioned one of the very staggering and sad stats of what it means when unemployment goes up, what happens in the homes of America, and remembering those who are in need, remembering those who are looking for a home. And I believe there's at least one couple watching right now that had one day a dream to foster or adopt. I would like you to talk about that just for a little bit, to plant that seed of that dream, because I believe through these next couple minutes, there's going to be one couple who's going to say, wow, we still cannot give up on that dream, despite the discouragement and the circumstances right now that we're going through, to not give up on that dream.
There's no way that I could have gone around the world and motivated people and created a multi-million dollar global business were it not for my mother. She's my first storyteller. Her ankles were swollen from arthritis, and I used to rub her ankles, and she would tell me stories. And I remember Mama saying, oh, Arthur's bothering me. And I said, Mama, who's Arthur? She said, don't worry, you get old enough, you'll find out. Okay, and she was talking about arthritis, okay. And to see her walking in the rain, swollen knees, swollen ankles, she was my hero, and I wanted to be like her. She was unstoppable. She didn't let the pain, she didn't let arthritis, she didn't let anything stop her for providing food for us to eat, a roof over our head, and clothes on our back. And I said, when I become a man, I'm going to take care of you. And when I turned 18, she never had to pay another bill, and I took care of her until she was 89 when she made her transition. And all of us, I think, have a chance to do what my mother did. A reporter asked her, why did you adopt 7 children? And she said, I wanted to share my life with someone, that God has been so good to me. I wanted to be a blessing to others. And I think that we all have the opportunity, as you have decided, to be a blessing to others with your life. Horace Mann said, we should be ashamed to die until we've made some major contribution to humankind.
Amen. Amen. Wow. Les, what an honor. What a privilege. The three questions I want to ask you is, what are you most thankful for?
I'm thankful for my mother, for my children and friends like you, and that I woke up this morning in my right mind. You know, it's not always there, but at least some of it's here. Oh, whatever. Behave.
And your health, you're doing good?
I'm doing great. I'm kicking cancer's butt so badly. The cancer rate in my neighborhood dropped by 98%.
What?
Come on now.
What?
Yes.
Awesome. Awesome. Second last question. What was the biggest obstacle that you faced that actually brought the biggest opportunity? It could be in any area of your life.
The biggest obstacle that I ever faced that brought me the biggest opportunity was my believing that I couldn't do what I'm doing. And as a result of that limited vision of myself, someone interrupted my thinking. And I realized that sometimes you have to believe in somebody's belief in you. And he just saw it. He just saw it for me. And he said, I just believe you can do this. And it gave me the courage to try. And courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is the willingness to act in spite of the fear.
So good. And Les, last thing, give us three things, three keys to life. Three, if there was only three things that you could ever tell anybody, what would they be?
Number one, work on your mind. You don't get in life what you want, you get in life what you are. Number two, develop your communication skills. Once you open your mouth, the world will define and see you in a different kind of light. And three, develop collaborative, achievement-driven, supportive relationships that will allow you to live a life that will outlive you.
Love it, love it, love it. Les, tell us, any product that you want to mention right now, any opportunity, any training, any book, anything that you can offer someone watching right now, just letting you know, I'm not getting a kickback from this. I believe in Les and I know he's changed lives. This is a friend to a friend for you though. Our love for you watching right now. Les, take it away. Tell them what they can get from you right now.
Well, one, I want them to get my new book. It's called You've Gotta Be Hungry. The Greatness Within to Win. And they can go to Amazon and put in the search, You've Gotta Be Hungry by Les Brown. The second thing that I'm doing, I believe that we need voices of hope. We are dealers of hope. When there's hope in the future, that gives you power in the present. So I'm doing one-on-one coaching. And so people who are listening, who are ready to invest in themselves and who want to be trained on how to use their voice to create an experience with an audience, distract, dispute, and inspire, and be able to make a global impact, they can go to lesbrown77@gmail.com. That's lesbrown77@gmail.com.
Beautiful. Les, thank you so much for your love for the world, your faith, your love for your family, your love for life that is so contagious. Thank you for making us laugh. Thank you for making us think. And thank you for making us realize that dreams come true. Leslie Brown, I love you so much with all my heart. God bless you, sir. And Godspeed to you.
I love you. And there's absolutely nothing you can do about it.
Love you, everyone. Thank you for joining us today on this epic premiere debut interview with Les Brown. Have a great day, and I'll see you next time.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening. Help us reach as many people as possible by giving us a rating, a review, and subscribing to this podcast. Love you so much. And remember, share this with anyone you know who needs to hear this as well. I'll see you next week.